Welcome to football season. Everyone excited to get underway. College football in full this weekend. And you know what that means, at least locally, another run with the Rebels and another run with the Rebel Room. I'm Case Kiefer, joined by UNLV beat writer Mike Romala and Las Vegas Sun managing editor, UNLV expert Ray Brewer. A little bit different feeling going into this year for UNLV, at least from where I am. I think this is probably the 10th season I've been around. It seems like maybe only the second or third where you talk to some people and there's some real optimism. Some people really think this team could do something. Mike, you've been at an off-season full of practices now. You've seen this team as much as anybody. Is that optimism reasonable? Should we be expecting a little more this season?
I can tell you that the team itself, like the players and the coaches, they are convinced that this is the year that, you know, they're going to have a winning season and they're going to go to a bowl game. I mean, last year you kind of get the thought that you got the vibe that they thought it could happen. I think this year everyone is convinced that if they play is a reasonable up to expectations, they should be, you know, 7-5, 6-6 at the worst. I mean, this is, if you're UNLV, if you've been following Tony Sanchez all along, and it's going into his fourth year now, like, this is the year they've sort of been building to it. And everything is kind of in place. Well, I don't want to say everything is in place because there's still a lot of holes and question marks. But, I mean, this is the best team that they've had since he's been here. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen now.
All right, Brewer, well, you are the unabashed homer on this podcast for UNLV. So give us, if you say it's a problem, we know it's a problem. What are some of those questions Mike just mentioned? What concerns you for UNLV going into this year?
Well, I mean, obviously the defense has to be a concern. This is a first-year defensive coordinator. It was so bad last year that they had to fire the guy calling the defensive plays. And it's been a mixed bag the last 3 years during the Sanchez era, or, I mean, even going back for the history of the program, right? They've never been lights out defensively. It's either they can't get pressure on the quarterback, they can't defend the long ball, or they're giving up massive yardage in each game. And if you just take a look back at last year, they had big leads against Utah State, big leads against Air Force. The defense can't hold up its end of the bargain. So that's a concern. And I think another concern that's probably parallel for me is, yeah, on paper, the schedule is very forgiving. It has many opportunities for them to be a bowl-eligible team. But until you learn how to win games and win them consistently and not give up these leads or find ways to lose, it's going to be one gigantic question mark. I felt very good last year. I thought that the schedule could lend some victories to get to a bowl, and then they lost some games, you know, the bookend games, the first game and the last game that they should have won, and it was embarrassing. So if you want to know my concerns, those are them. And I tell you what, I wish, guys, that we would have done this podcast last week, because now that Prairie View, who, you know, I had penciled in for a win, put up a pretty good fight against Rice, and Hawaii, who I had as a loss, but many people think they're going to be. They went in and they handled Colorado State in Fort Collins.
Yeah. The defense is obviously like that's the biggest question by far. Personnel-wise, like, I don't think there's been like any huge like talent influx or upgrade at any of these positions. You're basically, if you're banking on UNLV to have a better defense this season, you're basically just banking it on the coordinator, Tim Skipper, coming in and, you know, changing something or doing something on the coaching side that makes you a more effective defense. And, you know, that's something that it's hard to predict. Like, you have to see that before you can sort of know that it's going to happen or know that they're going to come through. So, yeah, that's, I mean, the biggest question by far. And USC in week one is not going to help that. That's if UNLV has whatever holes they have on defense, is definitely going to be exposed by USC. That's a talented team that can attack you in many different ways. So yeah, that's the big question. Offensively, they're good enough to beat a lot of those teams on the schedule. Like you said, it's a forgiving schedule. Offensively, they can compete and beat most of the teams that they're playing this year. It's just, how many games is a defense going to give away?
Yeah, and if you're talking yourself into UNLV this year, I think I agree with you guys. It starts with the schedule. I mean, I think this looks even a little weaker than last year. The Mountain West is just kind of in a down pattern. I don't see what's going to break that. But then defensively, I mean, that's the other thing that has to be fixed. And I think the optimistic view is that, for one, like Brewer said, it can't get much worse. I mean, last year was such a disaster. And we've seen huge – I mean, every single year, not just we've seen, like, historically, every year there are defenses that go from terrible to great. I mean, football has taught us that defense is something that can be turned around a lot quicker, especially with a new coordinator. You know, if there were problems with Kent Bayer, as many have intimated, and Tim Skipper can turn that around, I think you could see a big thing from UNLV. The tough thing for me is – you know, I look at the schedule and I kind of agree with Mike. It looks like a 6-6, 7-5 range, but it's just so hard to be, you know, all positive and calling on UNLV when it's just a program so, not to be harsh, but just kind of cloaked in failure. I mean, every single year, if you talk yourself into getting up and thinking that they're going to have a good year, they've been down. If they go 7-5, it's automatically one of the best seasons in program history. It's just hard to call for like a historic outlier like that.
That's the thing. Like when you go through the schedule, and I'm going through it, and I'm saying to myself, "Well, week two, that's a win. That should be a win. That should be a win." And then I have to remind myself that they're going to lose some games that everyone thinks that they should win, and that's sort of just the way it is with UNLV. There are going to be landmines in there that you don't expect. They're going to give up some big leads. There's going to be one complete tragedy this year where they just absolutely blow a game at the end or something goes horribly wrong, and you kind of have to build that into your expectations. And I think if you're Tony Sanchez, that's the culture that you're trying to change, and it doesn't happen overnight, and I think we've seen it. It doesn't even happen, you know, over 3 years when you start in as deep a hole as UNLV was in. And so you're at the point where your team should be good, but you're still just expecting those problems to crop up during the season that cost you a couple games. And when you're right on the edge of bowl eligibility every year, the one game or two games, it makes, you know, all the difference.
Yeah, and I just think that if you look at, you know, the growth of the program with Sanchez, and I know I've said this until I'm blue in the face, but they've increased their win total by one game. We're in a day and age of sport where one game clearly isn't enough. But I think along the way, these hiccups that we've talked about, whether it was Howard last year or the two games against Reno the last 2 years, a lot of that could just be explained by just the growth of the program, right? You know, he took over in last game of the first year, dressed one tight end, right? Spring practice, not enough offensive linemen even to put together two teams. And as he's built up, you know, this program in terms of just sheer numbers, right? Forget about guys who could play, but just sheer numbers. Now I think he's going into season four where he's got two really good tailbacks, where he's got a solid group of wide receivers, where the defensive line still isn't great, but at least the numbers are there, right? The defensive backs, he's kind of got those in the right position. So I think just the numbers-wise – puts him in a decent spot. And, you know, at the end of every college football season, Case, crazy things happen because injuries. You just can't predict who's going to go down. And now I think if some people get banged up, UNLV may be better capable to respond to that. And I think that's a difference. I could easily see them falling into eight wins. I could easily see them sputtering and only winning four games. And, you know, the questions outweigh the positives. I mean, we still haven't talked about Armani Rogers, right? Here's a guy who his style of play is reckless. And if he gets injured, who's going to come in and play quarterback? Also, Armani Rogers, accuracy has been a problem before. Is he going to be this quarterback that could pick you apart? What happens if he doesn't? You know, what happens if you know, Lexington, who's a 5'8" tailback, goes down, okay, Charles Williams is going to come in. Well, how good is Charles Williams, right? He didn't play all of last year. He was above average to great as a freshman, 900 yards, I think. So I think there's just so many questions that are going to be answered along the way. But here's a team that should be confident. You got UTEP as your home opener, right? You got New Mexico at home to open league play. Those are two winnable games in two very important spots. and you're going to SC to face a first-time starter quarterback. What if you get a moral victory there?
Yeah, I think we've discussed this before, but I'm just – and I know people – the offense has had some rough stretches going into the season in practice. People have been worried about it. I'm just not worried about the offense. I think the offense is going to be fine. The only qualifier, the only if there is if, like Brewer said, Armani Rodgers goes down. And I don't even think it's an if. I think it's a win. You know, with the way he plays, you just hope it's not serious, and you hope that you know, he only misses a little bit of time and UNLV – can endure there, but I think certainly this offense is going to be good. Last year's offense, I think, was better, even better than people realize, and I don't see them at least keeping the same pace this year.
Yeah, the offense is, there's nothing to be concerned about. I think even if Armani Rodgers goes down for a game or two, you're okay. This is a team in the Mountain West, against pretty much any Mountain West team, you're expecting them to score 30 points and above, and pretty much week in, week out. It's the everything else that goes with it. I mean, defensively is the main question. Offense, Lexington Thomas, Charles Williams, you've got other guys who can even step in behind them. The receivers, they don't have that one star receiver, but they've got a group of guys that are all, you know, pretty good pass catchers, and they've got chemistry with Rodgers. The offensive line is really solid. If you want to make a case for UNLV going into USC and, you know, posting some kind of moral victory, I think it's probably starts up front. USC a little bit struggled a little bit last year, you know, defending the run. Their advanced stats were not great against the run. UNLV goes in there with a big veteran offensive line that's, you know, top 20 in the running game and nationally in the last 3 years. That's, you know, one area UNLV, if they go in there and have some success running the ball, maybe that's something to build on. But once they get past that first game against USC, everyone else, the offense should be able to roll.
Certainly. Right now, USC, a 28-point favorite, as high as a 28-point favorite, just grown and grown and grown there. It's interesting because, of course, like Mike said, USC has all the talent, but it's a team that probably has as many unknowns coming into the season as UNLV. Really young. I know Tony Sanchez's team have stayed with some bigger programs like USC in games like this in the past few years. Ray, I know you're excited for this game. Anytime you get to see your alma mater on the field against a big-time program like this, what are you looking for on Saturday? Is there anything we can take out of this, or is this just get out of there and don't get injured?
Yeah, I think that was the narrative case when they played like at Michigan 3 years ago or against UCLA or Ohio State last year. But I think now they've progressed to where I think internally, and Mike will have to correct me, the expectations might be slightly different. I thought that against Michigan and Ohio State and even UCLA, a game that they were in the second half, that it was, hey, let's make sure that Rodgers doesn't get banged up. Let's not totally get embarrassed on national television, right? I think now they want to go in there and compete and have a chance to win.
Yeah, that's the one thing that you just sort of reminded me, which I thought was kind of ludicrous. But going into the Ohio State game last year, it felt like the biggest storyline for UNLV was don't get Armani Rodgers injured heading into league play. And that tells you everything you need to know about where the program is when you're going into a game and your only hope is to get out of there alive. And I haven't heard anyone suggest that going into this game. I haven't heard anyone say, don't get Armani Rodgers injured in the first game of the season. Let Lexington Thomas take too many hits. So there has been a big change in terms of mentality just heading into the games. I don't think people are just chalking this up as they're going to go in there and get completely devastated and USC is on a completely different planet. I think most people still expect it to be a 3, 4, 5 touchdown difference. But it sounds like, you know, you're sort of a backhanded compliment for UNLV, but I mean, there's something to be said for that, right? It's like you're at least going in there not expecting to get, you know, completely destroyed physically.
Yeah, and I think that just speaks volumes about to where UNLV is. And listen, by the time league play rolls around, and I know that I might be in the minority on this, but the only team on UNLV's schedule in league play that I think they're going to struggle with is San Diego State. San Diego State's had UNLV's number, and San Diego State's down. I think that they could compete with Fresno. They've beaten them the last 2 years. And that game's here. I think they could win at Utah State, which people think I'm crazy to say, but they had a lead against them last year, and Utah State has a young quarterback as well. I just think, you know, with the exception of this USC game, and when they go to Arkansas State later, Casey talked me into that, they've got a really good quarterback. I think they got a lot of chances to be in a lot of games, and it's going to be interesting to see how this thing plays out. I mean, this to me, and in case you've been saying this is 10 years or so for you, and obviously we've been together the whole time, is this the most optimistic that – I mean, I think in past years I've fabricated some optimism to get, you know, because I'm a UNLV guy. But I think this year it's like there's more people that agree with me.
I would put it second, not to get into UNLV history, but the year I first came here was in the middle of Mike Sanford's tenure, and they had pulled off that upset at Arizona State the year before, had a much feel back. I felt like that year, I feel like it was more universally optimistic. This year, I just feel like UNLV fans have been beaten up so much. There's still a segment out there that feels like we're never going to be good. But second, that's not bad at all. I think there is a lot of people that are expecting something to come out of it. And we have Mike's 101 predictions up today on LasVegasSun.com. Number one was record 6-6, which I think would fit with what Brewer just said. Tony Sanchez's he took him from 2 wins to 3 wins, from 3 to 4, from 4 to 5, and now from 5 to 6. You know, is that the bar? Is 6 wins good enough? Bowl game? And is that just barely clearing it, or is that something we should all be happy with?
I think the point that Tony Sanchez would make when you talk about, you know, where the bar is, you know, 6-6 is not, you know, some outrageous successful season in the grand scheme of things, but you're not just clearing that bar this year. I think what you want to do is you set the bar at 6-6 this season, and then that becomes your bar for next year, and you've got to clear that next year. And then the year after that, you go 7-5, and that's a successful season next year. Well, then you've got to clear that bar again the next year. And that's sort of how you create that culture of, you know, we've got to win more games than we lose. And then it becomes, hey, we've got to win 60% of our games. Hey, we've got to win 9 games every year. And it, you know, obviously if you're doing it, you know, 1 game at a time, winning 1 more game per year, it's going to take a while to get there. But that's what I would say. It's 6-6 is not, you know, you can't throw a parade if UNLV goes 6-6 this year, but it does give you that step forward to the future where that now becomes the bar that you've got to clear for, you know, the season after. And that's sort of how you get it going.
I totally agree. For me, if they do win 6 games, they better win the last one.
Yeah, 2 straight years that cannon has been blue. I do think at the least 6 would also increase Tony Sanchez's job security. I know it's nothing anyone wants to talk about going into the season, but of course a new athletic director, the bowl expectations. If they don't go, you know, if it is another struggle of a year, we got to think the job security I just spoke of is not quite as high, correct?
Yeah, that the combination of the new athletic director and the fact that you now have black and white expectations is something that, you know, it's not where a coach wants to be. You've got someone, Desiree Reed-Francois, didn't hire Tony Sanchez. She didn't sign him to his extension that he's currently working under. He was extended through the 2021 season. So, I mean, she was not in place when that deal was made. So that's sort of working against him. And then also the fact that you've sort of set that there's no real – there's the bar for success, as we said, is not nebulous this year. You can't really just you can't really pitch it as, oh, we're growing the program and we're getting better and this and that and culture. You can't really be that vague about it. This level of the line is bowl game. Like, if you make a bowl game, it's a good year. If you don't make it, that's a bad year. And that's a clear step backward. And for Desiree, she has no allegiance to Tony Sanchez. Like, that's not, if she wants to get rid of him at some point, that's not her mistake. Like, it's not going to be held against her. She didn't hire him. She can make that decision going forward strictly on whether she thinks he's the best choice for the program or whether she thinks she can get someone better in here. I don't know that she thinks she does, but it's not like Tony – I think she gets along with Tony Sanchez. I think she likes him. I think she likes the progress that he's made. But she strikes me as someone who is very business-oriented, very detail-oriented, very – and she preaches the organizational structure. She wants everything very organized, everything to run a certain way in a very professional way. And if it comes down to make a decision, she's going to be rational about it. And it hurts even more that, you know, there's no sentimentality of, oh, I saw something in Tony Sanchez and I brought him here and I gave him the job and we've got to see this thing through. That really doesn't exist with Desiree Reed-Francois. It's, for her, it's about, can we get a better coach in here? Is there someone who's better positioned to lead this team? And if she thinks so, then, you know, she can act on it and it's not going to be, you know, held against her. So it's a long way of saying Tony Sanchez better win 6 games this year or the seat is going to get pretty hot.
Certainly. I think it's something that's going to be kind of bubbling under the surface. Not for a while, though. I mean, I think you look at the non-conference schedule, and unless there's another disaster like last year, it looks like 2-2. I mean, they should beat UTEP. They should beat Prairie View. And if they play well or, you know, happen to pull an upset at Arkansas State or play well with USC, that's a bonus. But, you know, we'll have to see how this team holds up through the season. There's been a lot of issues once you get into that midseason. Like Brewer's already mentioned, those 2 straight losses to Reno where they've just looked terrible, and I know a lot of that's from injuries. We'll see if Tony Sanchez has built that depth to endure it a little more this year. Mike's on record saying 6-6, and I just look at it, I think that's where we are, too. I think that this looks like a 6-win team to me. It's really hard to call for 7, but since this is the year that the Rebels have been building towards, I think 5-7 would just be pretty devastating. So I'm going to go with 6-6 as well. I know, Brewer, you've been bouncing around with upset games. Oh, putting it up there now. Just a second ago, I'll let you say your own prediction, but just a second ago you said anywhere from 4 wins to 8 wins is realistic. Should I be surprised you wound up on the high end of that range?
No. Not at all. You know me. I'm always optimistic. I got him 1-8, and Tony's contract goes through 2021, so that means they'd have to pay him 19, 20, and 21, and pay a new guy 19, 20, and 21, and this is a school that's got no money. So the seat's going to feel awfully hot, but I don't think he's going to get kicked out of it anytime soon.
If they go 4-8, would you say is there a possibility they can find a way, I would think?
I don't think they would get rid of him after this season, barring just some absolute disaster. I don't think this season is when it's going to happen, but the seat would get hot, and that may, you know, getting rid of a coach with 3 years left on his deal is tough to swallow for a school in the financial situation of UNLV. But 2 years is, you know, that's not as hard to swallow. And then 1 year, I mean, you're basically writing off that season anyway. So, yeah, I mean, the closer he gets to the end of that, the extension gave him some breathing room. Just if he posts a winning season, then he's got nothing to worry about probably through the end of that contract. And you could probably start talking with another extension. If, you know, if they exceed, if they win 7 games this year, or if they go 6-6 and win a bowl game and they're 7-6, then maybe you start tacking a couple of years onto that contract. If Desiree Reed-Francois is comfortable with him and feels confident that he's got it going in the right way. But yeah, I don't think it would happen after this season, but the seat might start to get a little hot. Is there, Ray, do you have a scenario in mind for week one against USC? I know you were saying, you know, if they can find a way to keep it close or just sort of, you know, hang around for a little bit. Do you have something in mind for how that's going to happen, or what do you see going on in week one?
You know, I think UNLV's strength is obviously running the ball. If, you know, they could eat up a little clock with the running game and stay – close into the second half, anything could happen. I think this game is going to mirror the UCLA game when UNLV went to Pasadena a few years ago, where, you know, they had a chance to do some things in the second half. I think UNLV is going to find a way to keep this from being a laugher.
Yeah, if you look back through the Tony Sanchez's first 3 seasons, they've played some of these games and they've played them better than expected. I mean, they went into Michigan and they did a credible job there. They were okay against UCLA in the fourth quarter. Ohio State was really the only game they got completely drilled in that game. Yeah, I mean, that matchup is UNLV's best bet, is running the ball. If they can get, 30 or 40 productive carries somehow and keep the chains moving, if they can score 3 touchdowns in this game, it'll be hard to get blown out. It would take an immense defensive collapse to, get blown out in that case. But, it's that first quarter. If they can hold the ball for 9 or 10 minutes in the first quarter, then maybe you've got a chance to hang around after that.
Yeah, a lot of agreement for the first podcast. Milk that clock. Just run down the play clock. Don't be in a hurry to do anything. Run the ball. Try to get 4 or 5 yards and tack on about 3 touchdowns and play USC close, and I think that would go down as a success.
Here's what I would add on to that as well. If you get that to-do list for the first quarter, and it really goes for the entire game, is if you're at UNLV, minimize any sort of special teams play. You don't want to be involved in anything with your special teams on the field. If there's an area where you're going to see USC's speed and athleticism just completely outclass UNLV, it's on a punt return where the field is broken, or it's on a kick return. I mean, if I was Tony Sanchez, every kick is a pooch kick. Every punt is as high as you can kick it and force a fair catch. I don't want anything to do with trying to tackle these guys in the open field or trying to get around their USC is going to have blockers in front of the return men, and the blockers are going to be faster than anyone UNLV can put on the field for special teams. So that would be my sort of hidden thing to watch. If UNLV, just stay away from special teams at all costs.
For sure. Sounds like a good call to me. So we're all in agreement with the USC game and roughly in agreement on the season as well. We all think they're going to be bowl eligible. 6 wins, 6 wins, and Brewer says 8 wins. If they win 8 wins in a bowl game, it sounds crazy now, but I would have no problem with them tacking on a couple years extension to Tony Sanchez. As Mike said, that would, I said earlier, if they were bowl eligible, we would automatically be one of the best seasons in school history. If they're 8-4 and win a bowl game, that is the best season in school history. So a lot of excitement for UNLV for once. I don't think you can disagree with that. The Rebel Room, we will be here every Monday during the season. Right around midday, we'll get it posted, not including next week. It's Labor Day, so we'll push it to Tuesday next week where we will break down this USC game, look in to UTEP. For Ray and Mike, I'm Case. Thanks for listening to another year of the Rebel Room.